Dr. Holdgrave, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It was back in September of 2006 that the CDC made the recommendation that it did for routine opt-out HIV testing in virtually all medical settings or healthcare settings. What kind of public policy questions were raised by that decision for you?
I think the issue for me was that clearly, because there are 1 to 1.2 million people in the U.S. who are living with HIV, and 25% of that population doesn't know they're living with HIV. And clearly we need to be able to provide testing so that people can get into treatment, really life-saving treatment that's available. And I think the overarching policy question is, what's the best way to do that? Is the best way to have opt-out testing in all routine healthcare encounters in the U.S., or is it better to have a more targeted approach to trying to do counseling and testing? And it was really that family of questions that interested us. What's the best way to get people who are living with HIV aware of their status and into treatment?
And so you laid out four different scenarios and did a kind of cost-benefit analysis, the cost in real dollars, and I would say the cost in human terms as well.
Yes.
And the first scenario was the CDC recommendation as it was. What did you find?
Well, we were interested in that particular scenario because the question had arisen actually at a Kaiser Family Foundation forum of what would the cost be if that policy recommendation were implemented in the entire United States, and also what could we expect in terms of public health consequences? How many people would be diagnosed and how many infections might be prevented? We wanted to try and answer those questions, and our best estimates in the paper that's just been published were that if CDC's recommendations for opt-out testing were implemented nationally, it would cost about $864 million in total. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean the government would pay all $864 million. It might be a mix of providers from the public sector and the private sector, but nevertheless, someone would need to pay for that testing. Then we also looked at, of the 250 to 300,000 people in the United States who don't know that they're living with HIV, how many of those persons would learn that they were seropositive through such a recommendation? And our best estimate is about 57,000 people, so just about one-fourth of the people who are seropositive and don't know it might learn that they were infected through that kind of testing policy. We also looked at what it might mean in terms of its prevention potential. We know from other studies that if someone knows that they're living with HIV, their transmission rate is only about 2% per year. But if someone doesn't know they're living with HIV, the transmission rate is more like 9 to 11% per year. So there's a benefit in terms of getting people into care. There's also a benefit in terms of prevention. If we can find out that people are aware that they're living with HIV, we can drop that transmission rate as well.
And I guess that led to the second scenario you investigated, which was the opt-out that leads to an increased risk, an increased incidence, rather, of risky behavior because of a lack of counseling associated with the testing.
Yes, and we thought that was an important issue because in CDC's recommendations, they're calling for opt-out testing. There doesn't need to be counseling nor risk assessment that would accompany that testing. And we were concerned that if someone, let's say, were actively injecting drugs and came in and got an HIV test, perhaps repeatedly got HIV testing, and got a negative result, might that in some way reinforce that risk behavior so that someone would believe that, well, the behaviors I'm engaged in are really not putting me at risk? So we looked at a scenario which allowed for consideration of that possibility as well.
What were the findings?
Well, we found that the cost of the program would be about the same, but you'd actually prevent less transmissions. In the opt-out testing policy in general, we think you'd prevent about 3,600 transmissions in the U.S. If we allow for some behavioral offset, is what we called it, this increase in risk behavior by not having counseling, we think that would drop that number to about 3,000. So there would be some penalty in terms of potential behavioral offset under that scenario.
Okay. And then the third one is testing accompanied by counseling.
Yes, we looked at a third scenario, which we said, what if everyone who was approached in the healthcare setting for testing got some risk assessment and got pre-test counseling, If you tested positive, you'd be counseled after getting your test result. And if you're at high behavioral risk of infection, you'd also be tested and be counseled after you were tested. And when we looked at that scenario, the costs went up quite substantially from about $864 million to about $1.4 billion. But because you would be counseling some persons who were actually seronegative but at high risk of infection, you could prevent some more transmissions as well and more infections as well. So you would spend a little bit more, but you would get more in terms of public health benefits. And the cost per infection averted was then roughly about the same.
And then the fourth scenario was testing with more intensive counseling in healthcare settings where HIV positive tests, I guess, were more likely to be found?
Yes, what we were really interested in was we posed the question, if under CDC's recommendations it would cost about $864 million to have opt-out testing across the country, what if that amount of money was available to have a more targeted voluntary counseling and testing campaign where you might look at targeting in three different ways? The first way, you might look at geographic areas with higher seroprevalence and say, I want to do a lot of testing here. A second way might be to look at different kinds of venues where people are accessing health care, but they don't normally have good access to health care. So I'm thinking of emergency rooms, community health care settings, and so on. And then a third way of targeting might be focusing on different risk behaviors. So if someone came in for routine health care, but you had some reason to believe because of a risk assessment or behavioral screen that the person was at risk of infection, you might target your testing efforts there. And what we really found by doing that analysis was that even for the same amount of money, even if you could get a seropositivity rate or a rate of persons testing HIV positive of 1%, which is probably pretty achievable, if you could just get a 1% rate of persons testing positive, you would wind up, instead of identifying about 57,000 people who were living with HIV, you might be able to identify as many as 188,000 people, a big difference in terms of diagnosis.
Big difference.
And also because you would be identifying more people living with HIV, you would avoid more transmissions to their seronegative partners as well. And in addition, you could do more counseling for persons who are at high risk of becoming infected who are yet still HIV negative. And so instead of preventing about 3,600 transmissions, we believe that under this scenario, we'd prevent somewhere around 14,500 transmissions or infections. And the cost per infection averted would go way down from about $237,000 to about $56,000.
When you step back from all of these findings, from looking at it in so many different ways, what are the takeaway messages? What do you want health policy officials to take from this and do what with?
Well, what I'm very interested in, I think, is the bottom line here is that, again, persons who are living with HIV and don't know it need to find out their serostatus because there's life-saving treatment that's available. And I think it's really a matter of public health urgency for people to be able to know that they're seropositive and get into life-saving care and treatment. That's a public health imperative. And so then I think the policy question is, what's the best way to have a testing strategy, a testing policy in the U.S. to help people find out that they're seropositive and at the same time help people who are negative at high risk of infection to be able to get behavior change counseling so that they can stay negative and avoid becoming infected? And I think that, or at least what I hope this paper does, is help expand the discussion a little bit. Instead of focusing on one particular kind of testing policy, the opt-out testing in healthcare settings, that we start to look at, well, what if we compare opt-out testing to a more targeted approach, which seems to have substantially larger public health benefits? And I think that it's important to also keep in mind, accompanying this paper, Ron Valdeseri, formerly of CDC, has an editorial accompanying this paper. And he really calls for us to consider a very broad discussion about how can we best set up the healthcare system, if you will, so that we're helping people to learn of their seropositivity early in infection, getting people into care and treatment, and that we not only consider opt-out testing versus targeted testing, but a more broad discussion about how to array the healthcare system and our prevention services. And I think that's really important, too.
And for policymakers, when they look at this, is the big challenge for them to get past the big upfront dollar figures associated with the more intensive counseling?
Yes, I think that cost is an issue, but we also have to always keep in mind the return on investment of public dollars as well. And even though we're talking about a substantially large figure of money in terms of whether it's for opt-out testing or for targeted testing, when we look at the cost per infection averted under the targeted testing scenario, it was about $59,000 per infection averted. We could compare that to the lifetime medical care costs of someone who needs treatment. Mm-hmm. And the numbers in the literature vary from a little over 200,000 to a little over 300,000. If we compare that 59,000 cost per infection prevented to the medical care costs that we would save, we're actually saving society money, if you will, by having these programs in place. So I think it's an issue of, as you said, kind of getting over the sticker shock, perhaps, of what would this program cost, but looking at what are the benefits, both in terms of return on investment, in terms of medical care costs that are avoided, as well as the human consequences of helping to avoid someone becoming infected with HIV. I think in the U.S., we have become a little bit complacent, and we forget that there's still roughly an HIV infection in the U.S. every 13 minutes, and there's still an AIDS funeral in the U.S. roughly every half hour. Now, that's better than the one funeral every 15 minutes of a few years ago, but it's still a really important public health challenge, and anything we can do to address that is very important.
That's the final word. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.